And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I should go. And so it opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are. And we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
All right, you're welcome along to the GAR. This is the Hurling Show. Mikey's not here today. It's just myself, Conal and Damien. How's it going, lads?
Hi, Willie. How you doing?
Hi, Colm.
I said I wouldn't mention this at the top of the Hurling Show because I've already given out about it at the top of the Football Show, but feck it. I just am because I'm annoyed. Richie Hogan and Shamie Callanan, lads, they were promoting hurls yesterday. New composite hurlies, actually. And we talked a lot about loving your hurl and different hurlies and synthetic ones, but apparently this composite hurl has a much better touch. And that's the one thing you and Damien actually thought, agreed with the synthetic one. There's too much of a bounce off it. But anyways, they're promoting this and they've helped design this new Reynolds composite hurl, and they went to a media event yesterday to promote it, and the media was there, sports journalists, and the two lads were, or the media was informed that the two lads wouldn't speak about hurling, you know, so they were just going to talk about the hurls. But, like, I mean, that's not the way the media works. You have to give them some quotes, they'll write up a piece about your quotes, and then they'll promote your product, you know what I mean? So their managers, I've almost like a broken record, that's why I didn't want to speak about it today. But, like, I mean, hurling's very frustrating in that you've got only 9 counties, you've got rugby and soccer all over the media this week, and hurling, which needs to promote itself, it needs the big names in the papers competing with these other sports. And Conal, you have county managers not allowing them to speak to the media in bloody March.
Yeah, look, I think we said it off air, like, it's crazy stuff. I think you need to promote the game as much as you can, and the two of the biggest stars that probably the hurling have at the minute are the two lads, and going to a media event, promoting their own business, and not being allowed to talk from their managers, I presume it is, they won't let them, is crazy. I don't understand it. I had a bit of it when we were starting in the football, and I remember Pilar Caffrey wouldn't let lads do interviews, and, you know, a couple of lads did interviews, and then, you know, he found out about it later stage, and it was disciplined in the camp, and it was a big no-no, and you're more worried about what was going to be said in the camp about a lad doing an interview rather than actually what was said, because I think if the manager trusts the players, very rarely does a player go out and say anything anyway. Like, it's usually the same stuff they trot out all the time. But I would say for the lads themselves, it's probably disappointing. It's probably something they've put a lot of maybe financial money behind and putting their name to it as well. And going to an event like that isn't certainly not going to help them.
No, they've designed it. And you look at Richie Hogan, who's a brilliant interviewee, gives an opinion on things without giving trade secrets. And Shamie Callanan, who's a clever fella as well, Damien. It's almost like these managers are not trusting these two grown men to be able to talk about their team in an intelligent way and also promote the business that it looks like they're involved in, because they designed the hurls and they're in promoting it. If that was me, now I know I'm probably not a greatest example, because I would have been like, maybe had discipline issues and nearly rocked the boat probably too much in my career. But I just wouldn't stand for that as a grown man and as someone who tries to have a life outside GAA, to have your manager tell you how you can promote your own business or tell you not to speak about something, basically treat you like a child.
We've spoken about this, Colm, numerous times. I think it's ridiculous. As you just said there, the month of March, and managers telling players that they're not allowed to do interviews or they're not allowed to give quotes, whatever. You're giving an example there of Shamie Callanan and Richie Hogan, two former Hurler of the Years, right? So you're speaking about maturity, you're speaking about class, you're speaking about elite hurlers, right? And asking these guys to not speak to the media, and you know, or if you want to speak to the media, you have to ask, you know, for permission. I just can't understand it. Back in 2012, it happened to me, would you believe? We won an All-Ireland semi-final against Cork. We were after getting to the All-Ireland final, and I think News Talk rang me. I think, Colm, you could have been a part of the show, and you rang me just for what I call a general chat like this, and I took the call and I said I was going to speak about the match and speak about how well Galway were going at the time. And the following training session, it was brought up about one player didn't get permission to take an interview and do an interview, and, like, I was just there looking at them going, Did I say something wrong? Are we training hard? It was all the simple questions. Were you training hard? Yes, we're training very hard. It's very professional. The setup is going very well. Everyone is bonding well. All the simple, honest answers. But this thing of stopping players from doing interviews and not allowing them or not keen on doing it, I just think it's wrong. You're trying to promote yourself as a player and also promote the game and whatever. So I have a huge problem with it, Colin. I'd be in the same boat as yourself. I just think it's absolutely crazy.
I think there's a difference, though, between, you know, okay, some lads, you might have to turn up to a shop or whatever it is and open up the shop and they get whatever it is, X amount of money, and that's fine. But I think that if the lads are actually involved in it and it's their own company,
yeah,
and they want to promote it, and, you know, it's very hard to make a few quid anyway. You're like,
to get that national exposure has been taken away from them, you know? Like, I mean, they shouldn't have that power to do that. Managers shouldn't have that power.
No, they shouldn't. I know if it was my own business and I wanted to promote it, and you only have a certain time frame when you're playing cricket, people are actually interested in what you actually say. So I think it's taken from them a good bit, and I'm sure it's probably more of a distraction now for them. To, you know, they're probably more annoyed now at the fact that they couldn't do it. And if the manager said to them, "Oh well, you have a big game the weekend, you can't lose focus," but now that it's in their head all the time that, like, Jesus, I can't even do an interview here. This is going to affect us, you know. And I'm sure the company that are making the hurls aren't happy either, so they're going to get pressure from everywhere now.
Yeah, that's the thing. And like, I do think with the hurling thing, and from this podcast, I've seen it, is like Cork are on a media ban, I don't mind saying it, Galway are on a media ban, Tipperary on a media ban, Kerry are on a media ban, like arguably the top four teams so far this year. And I think the point should be made of the soccer and rugby thing. Like, and I made this point on the football show, is there's a big hullabaloo within the GAA of moving the All-Ireland Finals from September to August because they're losing market space. But what about market space lost this week, where you'll have Tipperary and Kilkenny dominating the papers, you know, for 2 days, and that we don't have that. So don't think that doesn't make an effect, you know, or have an effect on, you know, publicising and the popularity of hurling and people, young people reading that and going, oh yeah, I want to be like Richie Hogan. This all snowballs.
But do the counties at the minute, do they do an actual press conference, or does it kind of where a media that would ring a player individually and they'd say meet him in a hotel and have a chat, or is it a proper media event?
Nowadays you'll usually only get the top players at media events. Like, if I was to ring, I've rang players from all those four counties and they've told me that they're on the media, they can't talk, that they'd like to talk but they can't. So, like, I mean, that's just put out there. And it's actually, funny enough, it's easier to get players in the championship than in the league, because they've games so frequently that they don't want to talk in between. In the championship you'll have a game and you won't have another one for a month, so they'll allow them maybe talk on the Monday after that, you know. It's a real weird one. But maybe, listen, after the two podcasts, lads, I've talked about too much, it's just very disappointing. And I'd love the spotlight to be shone on Brian Cody now and Michael Ryan and say, look what these two fellas are after doing on these two players, that they don't have the right to do what they're after doing on them. And I'd love that national spotlight to be asking Brian Cody and Michael Ryan that very simple question: who gives you the right to do what you did with them? Yeah, and that's a very simple question.
Yeah, but you know the answer you're going to get back. You know, we're here to concentrate on the game in the weekend, we need to get the players focused, and it's more important to get a performance in the weekend, and we need to progress in the league, and we need to go on in the championship, and that's exactly what you're going to get.
Yeah, and we'll say, shut up, that's nonsense talk. Brendan Marlowe, we talked a lot on Monday about Austin Gleeson, about what's his best position, is he being, you know, is his form suffering from his versatility? And you're two perfect men to talk about this, because you've moved around the field a good bit, but, you know, from midfield to forwards to the backs. And I saw some quotes from Brendan Marr, and he's talking about being moved around a little bit early in his career. And he said, if I'm 100% honest about it, that was probably the one thing that went against me in my career to date, my versatility. And managers have, I'm going to say, abused that, whether it's the right or wrong way of saying it. Yeah, I've taken one for the team. Now, in my memory with Brendan Marr, he's kind of gone from wing back to midfield, or centre forward as well. So he has probably moved around, similar to Austin Gleeson. But generally, you don't hear players saying, my form suffered because of that. Because, like, I know from my career, I moved around a lot, and I kind of saw it as a plus that there'd be much better chance of me being on the team whenever, you know, I could plug gaps everywhere. But still, when I look back on it now, I would love to have just been kept as a wing forward, where I thought it was my strongest position, but I never got that opportunity.
Yeah, it's a difficult one to, you know, I think versatility is great for a player, but and I think all players like to have a certain position and really concentrate in that, but you're also open to the fact that I don't mind playing in the backs, I don't mind playing the forwards, you know, I'll do a job there, no problem. And sometimes when you're that good and you can play in any position, but the problem is when your form drops a little bit, you start questioning, you're going, just why is he moving me around? Why am I midfield? I am a centre back, or I am a thing, so why doesn't he put me there? And I'm struggling to get into the game, I'm struggling this and struggling that. So look, it is difficult, but I don't know, I would see Brendan Maher, he had a great season in last year when he was midfield, but he's probably, his best position is probably wing back. He's probably played all.
Do you think so?
I would say he's probably one of the, especially as a defender, he's probably one of the tougher defenders and readers of the game that you'll probably come up against. Centre forward, he played a couple of games in the league. Don't know if it really works for him really there. He drops a little bit too deep at times, but I don't know. Maybe Dame would know more than that, but.
The way I look at it, Colin, is sometimes when you have such a brilliant attitude, it can go against you. And I know what happened there, Brendan Maher. For example, brilliant attitude, great team player, you know, always good body language the day of a match. And next thing, they need someone to do a job at wing back, we'll get Brendan to do that. Now they have a right good midfielder for the next game, we need someone to really go toe to toe with him. Brendan Maher is a great athlete, we'll get him to do this job. You go up and tell Brendan to do this job, and Brendan's attitude is, yeah, that's no problem, I'll do that job. And next thing, they need someone to do a job in the centre back. Next thing, they go, we'll line up Brendan for this job now, you go up to Brendan. And that's sometimes having a super attitude can go against you. And Brendan Maher has probably been brutally honest in saying that it probably went against him and his career, because, look, we'll say it straight, when it comes to All-Star, naming the All-Star team at the end of the year, and you're going, right, who is the best number seven in the county? Maybe Brendan Maher could have been the best number seven in the county, right, or in the country, but he could have played two games at midfield and one at centre forward and one at wing back, right? Yeah. But my opinion is, I think Austin Gleeson, we'll just go back to Austin, I think they need to find a position for Austin Gleeson. It's either in the forwards, or it's midfield, or it's in the backs, right? You know, or if it comes to a game plan with 20 minutes to go and they want to drop him back behind the half back line and pull him into the half back line, fair enough. But
where do you think is the best one? I'll ask the two of you, because we spoke here on Monday and there was kind of agreement that centre half forward might be the best place for him.
With the performances he put in the All Ireland semi final against Kilkenny, the first day and the replay, I think there's no question that's where I'd be playing. Austin Gleeson. There's an opinion out there that there's such a thing as natural skill and natural forwards and players that can do stuff, and then there's ball winners. Colin, he can do all three of them in the forwards, right? I said this to you last year, I can see him finishing his career as centre back, right? When this team changes and evolves or whatever, right? But definitely I would be playing Austin Gleeson in the forwards, between centre forward and full forward, and maybe if he wanted to go into the half forward positions for puck outs. But yeah, I would leave him there on the 40 and play off him and let him be the playmaker and the go-to man and the scorer. But I just think they are messing him out. He's playing too many different positions. He's our hurler of the year, and look at, I like the question, centre forward is the best position, and that's where I would leave him for championship. They're messing him around.
Yeah, no, I agree totally with all that. I think his physical presence alone and his leadership up there is great. And sometimes when you're getting moved around to vital positions from centre forward to centre back, and you know, you can sometimes feel during the game, oh, I need to go back and help them, and then you go back and the ball's up in the half forward line, and you know, I need to go up there and help them. So you can get kind of caught, and you can be in no man's land a lot of times. But right. I think what he gives to the forwards going is that something special that he brings to it. You know, you just never know what he's going to do, and his skill level is huge. And he's a great leader up there, and that's really what they need. And
I think he scored 5 points from playing Croke Park.
He did, yeah.
Kilkenny, and was it 1-4? Was it 1-4 or 1-5 in the replay in Turles?
Mm. Well, yeah, it was definitely. I can remember 1-2 clearly.
So look at it. He's clocking up scores along with making scores. Look, we know there's a bit to his game where he over elaborates and all that. Maturity will solve that and all that. But I just think they should play him on the 40. If they want him to go in full forward for a few minutes to, you know, just to shake things up. But this thing of playing him centre forward 1 week, midfield another week, centre back another week, full forward another week. And another thing I can't understand, just when we're talking about it, I just can't understand this whole numbers, this squad numbers with Watford.
Like, yeah, I have to admit, I don't like them myself.
Is it not just the players I like a number seven. I mean, give me number seven. It's like, no problem, they're seven and you can play where you like. Is it not just that? Because sometimes players like, I like 14, give me 14, or like 10, I don't like 12.
It doesn't look right, number six up playing corner forward.
But you see, I loved seven, but I only loved seven when I was playing number seven. Then I loved number 10 I preferred 10 to 12. Just a few weird things. And then I liked 14. But I wouldn't like to be playing 14 wearing number 7, if you know what I mean. You know that kind of, I'm a little bit traditional with that kind of.
I think it's going the way it'll be, you know, it's nearly a squad, you know, and it doesn't matter what number you get. You're going to be given a number at the start of the year, and that's the way it is. Because the way managers are calling out teams now, sure, it's like a general team. We'll just put that out, but that's not the team we're playing. We're going to chop and change. It doesn't matter.
But the problem with the way the game has gone, and hurling has gone like this as well, in that the middle third becomes so congested. Like, at least the numbers give you some idea of where these lads have lined out. Like, it's just almost impossible if they're going with squad numbers, going, where the hell was he even lined? Like, you actually would be confused because they don't go back into an orthodox formation even for puckouts or kickouts. So like, the numbers will give you an idea of where they're initially picked. Maybe positions just aren't what they were anymore, and that's nearly the traditional 3-3-2-3-3 is nearly like, it's nearly a thing of the past as well.
I think the only time you really ever see that is just before the ball is thrown in and before the game or just at half time.
You don't even see it for the national anthem anymore. They changed that. I used to love that for the national anthem, the proper players in their position, shake hands, and then the national anthem. Now it's this stupid line across the field, and it's all this sports psychology, we're in it together. And I think the optics of it doesn't look as good as when the 15 on 15 are properly lined out on the field. Or maybe is that old fashioned as well?
No, man, look, it is old fashioned, like, but I think it's not going to change. I think managers don't really care if people in the stand can't figure out what kind of system they have, or the media can't figure out. They don't really care. They know what they're doing themselves, and that's the bottom line. What I do think should come in is names on the jerseys, definitely.
Yeah.
You know, be a lot clearer, and you know, it's, and I have it, when dad will be watching the game, he'll be like, exactly what Damien says. Why is the number six up? Why is the centre back up full forward? That's ridiculous. There's nobody in behind, and it takes me a while to understand, but.
Yeah.
No, I definitely think names in the jerseys is the way to kind of beat that, maybe.
Definitely in hurling, anyways. What do you think, Damien?
Well, what I'd like to see, just when you're saying about names in the jersey, and I would agree with that, maybe, because it's hard to distinguish some players with helmets and all that, right? But what I'd love is a proper team to be named on the Thursday night before matches. The actual proper team, that this is the way it's going to be lined up for the supporters, for the media, for everyone. And if it's not, for example, Conal Keeney is named at number 7 and he ends up full forward. Like, the proper team is to be named the day for the weekend, and if it's not, I think there should be a fine.
Yeah,
I know there's all tactics. Maybe there is a fine or whatever, but like, so this thing of name, I always feel sorry for the player. Just say, for example, it's Colin Parkson is named 15 and the team has been released to the media, right? And Colin Parkson has gone home, and next thing he's to tell his parents that, yeah, I named on the team, but I'm not playing. Like this, and next thing, all your friends, your neighbours are coming up saying, best luck, Colin, the weekend. Jeez, I see you got the start. Oh, and Colin has to play along with it and go, oh, thanks very much, jeez, hopefully we'll do it. And next thing, the day the match comes, and Colin Parkinson's up in the stand, and number 23 is lined out corner for him because this is tactical.
Yeah, oh, that's heartbreaking. It really is for a player. And you could
happened. The best example of this now, and I'm used to names, and I have to apologise, right? But, what you call the Clare lad, I should know this, that scored 3 goals in the All Ireland final.
Shane O'Donnell,
and that was the private one and Honan was the lad who was left out, and he was, and like, I always say, how did he feel? How did his parents feel? How did his family feel? Like, this was a private thing that he was to make out that Shane O'Donnell was told just while he was having his breakfast. I don't believe that myself, but I hate that part of the whole thing. Just name your team and be proud of the team that you've picked, but that goes on and I hate it.
You could actually have a relation that might come home from America to watch you playing in a big game like that, and then you're sitting on the bench. That's humiliating, like, for a player.
It is humiliating.
To know that they're not playing and go along with that facade for a week, and that's pretty much the build up, well, for 2 or 3 days anyways, from when the team is announced. It's very, very unfair to put a player in that position.
It is very unfair, and it's happened a few teams that have been involved in, and you know, you're told to keep it quiet, but like, realistically, you go home and tell your parents, look, I'm not playing, that's not the team, you know. So I think everyone nearly does.
See,
that.
Yeah, and that, if that gets out then, though, like, I mean, it's almost like North Korea, some of these squads. Like, I've heard stories about, you know, the secrecy that is being kept. Like, you hear it with all the top teams, Dublin, Kerry and all these, and then, like, you hear
I hate that column. I hate this. You know, nobody's to know anything outside these four walls. And it's an inner circle, and nobody's to tell anyone. And we're a bond, and we're a team of brothers, and no one is.
Band of brothers, isn't that the new one?
Yeah, right. But this drives me crazy because, just as we gave an example there, you go home to your parents. You're still living at home, which most of them inter-county players are, and they say, come here, did they name the team? And you're after being told the team, and you're telling your mother and father, or your brother, or your closest brother, or your girlfriend, you're going, no, they didn't name it yet, they're going to name it now the next time. And all of a sudden you're telling lies. It's just something like a bee in my bonnet to have over this. It's just, I can't understand it. It's all to be kept in sight. It doesn't make sense.
No, I think it is a bit harsh. We actually sound like 360-year-old men here sitting in a pub reminiscing about the good old days. Come here, lads. I'll move it on to Michael Ryan. This is Michael Ryan who won't let his player promote his own business. And I think I'm going to introduce Michael Ryan and Brian Cody with that introduction whenever I mention them. In three of their five games, Ryan has made tactical decisions to substitute players before half time. Now, isn't that an interesting one? Like, defending All-Ireland champions, you see Jim Gavin doing it, and you see they have such competition for places, that this is clearly a tactic used in the year after an All-Ireland final to not allow players get comfortable in this team. You know, that's obvious. Three of the five, you know?
Yeah, no, it's not by chance he's doing it. He's definitely doing it to keep everyone on their toes, you know, to make sure that, look, if you don't go out and perform in the first 15, 20 minutes, you know, someone else is going to come in and do the job. And I think that's how he's trying to build a squad, like the Dublin footballers, where, you know, if you're not playing well, that's unlucky, but there's someone else going to come in and he's probably going to do the job. And if you don't produce the goods, well, I'm sorry, but you're not on the team for the next day. And it seems to be working so far. But you know, you have to have the squad to do that.
Yeah.
You know, as well as everything else. So, look, it's an interesting way, and it puts a lot of pressure on. You know, okay, there's probably always five or six lads that will get a little bit more time than others. But you know, if you're getting a chance, and if you miss the ball the first time and the second time, well, you can be guaranteed you're going to be pulled aside. And usually, you could always say, well, I'll get to half time. If things aren't going great, you have to do something before half time. But now it's gone to maybe 15, 20 minutes, and if you don't do something good or something that the manager wants, or stick to the tactics, will you be gone?
Yeah, it's interesting enough. Aidan McCormack, he was taken off. But Seamus Kennedy and Michael Breen are two fellas you wouldn't really expect. So he's obviously sending little messages into them. And I was just wondering, because I remember speaking to Alan Brogan when Dublin won the All-Ireland in 2011, and how loyal Gilroy was to the lads that actually eventually got them over the line and didn't bring in enough new faces. And it's that temptation, Damien, to stick with the team that has got you over the line. These lads soldiered for me. But you actually have to be like Jim Gavin and Michael Ryan and be completely ruthless and not let any sentiment come into it.
Yeah. You're right. I didn't know that stat, actually, just what you said there, Colin, and it's very, very interesting, right? But yeah, the big thing when you become an inter-county manager, especially with all these top counties, is you have to be ruthless. And the whole thing of you can get so friendly with the players, but only so much, and there's a thin line, I guess. And Michael Ryan has been doing that. So yeah, since the very minute he's come in, he released a couple of what we call their top class hurlers over a decade. So there's anyone. And he met them in meetings, the rumour was, and he said to them, look lads, I'm giving you the opportunity now to retire or you'll be dropped. So the choice is yours. And this year he started off again, you know, and even in all these interviews that he'd done after winning the All-Ireland, it was all about focusing on to the next year and doing, you know, bringing consistency and all that sort of stuff. But what he is doing effectively, Colin, and you're dead right, is he's bringing these, we'll say, players, younger players especially, he's bringing them down to earth. And he's keeping their feet on the ground, and he's the whole time, I'd say, emphasising how hard work pays off, and there's no one's position is safe and all that. And he's trying out new players, and he's also finding a couple of players, but he's just keeping the boys ticking over, and he's keeping them thinking like this. But you have to remember as well, Colin, it's easy for these managers to do that, right, when you've got such a brilliant squad of players. Mm. They have so much talent, and like we're giving the example there of Dublin and Tipperary, they have some squads. They really, really have some squad of players. So, but that's what's happening. He's keeping the boys thinking. He's keeping them on their toes, and that effectively is what makes good squads successful.
Yeah, well, but just a quick one before we move on to that, because we're going to have a look at Wexford and Kilkenny games and Galway and Waterford games. We talked about this as well on Monday, and we don't want to spend too much time on it, but I'd just like to hear your thoughts. He's awfully making the quarterfinals. They're the 10th best team in the two leagues. They came fourth in Division 1B. They won no game up until beating Kerry by 2 points in the last game. They looked like their season was a disaster, and then all of a sudden they're making the quarterfinals. So I think most people would agree that it's just not right, you know, it's wrong. But we talked about this for a good while on Monday about what actually could you do. Like, I was suggesting maybe the top three from one and then the winners of 1B, and they play in semis where you're not getting everybody back in. You know, that in that way Kilkenny would lose out. Derek Honan actually replied back to me on Twitter because I was giving out about it, and he suggested that first and second in 1A should go into semis, and third and fourth in 1A should play first and second in 1B in quarters, you know, which seems like a pretty fair way. So, you know, it's only the first and second in 1B that get through, you know, they would root out. And to be honest, you've got Limerick, Galway and Wexford. Like, really, two into it should be two of that three. You shouldn't, like, I was saying here that, like Shane Dowling said, there's not a huge motivation for these Limericks, Galways to get out of Division 1B because they've a grand handy number, and now they're in the quarterfinals, and if they're good enough, which they Galway are definitely good enough, Galway could win the league with these three tough games, and they haven't had the stress Waterford had about getting relegated. Look at Clare, Dublin have a relegation payoff. And like, it just the way it looks, it's such an easy route from 1B into the quarterfinals. Where's the motivation, Conal, to actually get out of it?
Yeah, no, I think Shane Dowling has a point there. Like, if you had, say, a club team, you know, like, say, a Cooler, say if Dublin were in 1B, you know, and the Cooler lads were gone, the pressure's totally off, you know. Okay, they might get maybe a Kerry or a Leash or something to start with. Okay, they mightn't win those games, but at least they're not going to get any hiding, and they're not going to be put down in the latter stages of the table. And it can give you a chance to start getting going in March and April, when realistically that's when it really matters.
And now Dublin, if they were in 1B, would be guaranteed to be in a quarter final. The Cooler lads be back suddenly, lads. This our year starts now, and the whole dynamic of the panel has changed. You're in the same position. Well, they're in a relegation now because they actually were unfortunate enough to be in the 1A.
Yeah, they were very unlucky for some of the games, and they should have won it. But now, if they were in 1B now, they'd be, you know, they'd be like the Wexford, you know. Everton, Everton's going well. Dublin are on the rise again, and you know, great management, and Everton would be happening like it is happening for Wexford at the minute. So look, at I think it's wrong with the way it is structured. Like, awfully getting to a quarter final is a complete joke.
Yeah,
you know, like, they really haven't won a game. Okay, they won their last game, but up until that point, you know, some of the performances they have were shocking.
Hammered by Galway, lost to Leash in a Moore Park. You know, they don't deserve to get into a quarter final.
No way. And, like, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if you know, look, they can put a good performance together, but they probably won't have enough for this weekend. But, you know, if it was a different team that they happen to be playing, you just wouldn't know, and then things can obviously improve after that. But the way the format is at the moment, it's a bit of a joke, really.
Yeah. What do you think, Damien?
I'd have to be honest here, Colin, and say I probably didn't understand the whole format, right? And say, this is what I thought was going to happen, right? Top three teams in Division 1 went straight to, we'll just say, semis, right? This is what I thought was going to happen, but I was wrong. But the top three teams went to a semi, and in a division, we'll just call it 1B, right? The top two teams played a final. And whoever won that final, then we'll say, just say it was Galway and Wexford, which they did top the, they played the final. And whoever won that final was promoted into the semi. That's what I actually thought.
Yeah, well, that's actually a good way of doing it.
Like, because, like, my opinion is, right, and I'm speaking against my own count here, like, Galway came second in 1B, and they're still into a quarter final. So, like, my whole idea is that the 1B should be like an intermediate county championship. You only get promoted if you win it.
Yeah.
Right? So there has to be a huge incentive. So it's basically you're driving the whole squad, lads. We want to get out of here, and we don't want to be down here playing these weaker counties. We want to be up in the top division. So, lads, we have to put out our strongest teams to get out of this division, to get playing in the top division. And I have to be honest and say, I didn't understand the format. I just thought that the top three teams out of Division 1, out of the six teams, just were going to be in the semis. The bottom two on Division 1 were going to play relegation, and the top two teams in Division 1B were going to play a final, which would make them 1B champions, which give them automatic promotion and a semi-final place in the National Hurling League.
Yeah.
But as I said, I was completely wrong. But just on Offaly, like Offaly getting to the quarterfinals, yeah, I completely agree. It's wrong. But like, it's going to do nothing. They're going to get such a hammer against Tipperary. It's not going to be funny.
No,
they would have been better off, just for their own morale, they'd have been better off if they actually lost to Kerry and let Kerry play Tipperary. That's going forward for the championship.
Yeah, for a man who didn't understand how it works, you've come up with a great solution there. I for one favour your new proposal for league structures. Come here, lads. We are out of time here on this one, and we want to have a look at two of the big games at the weekend. So we'll be back in a second and have a look at them.
There's no point in papering over like that. It is extremely tough. I won't tell you, but again, it's not about me or Morris or anyone else. It's about Waterford.
We waited so long. I know I've seen it. One of your tweets yesterday said 6 years. It's obviously a leash, man, but it's a long 6 years for us there, and we're absolutely thrilled.
I remember after we went to the final, I was just through the morning. My nephew was out in the lawn and he was baking freeze with his socks pulled up, pretending to be TJ Reid, and he fairly brought me back down to earth that day anyway.
Kenny and Wexford, lads, this is a huge game. And like, I mean, the first point I want to make about this is, isn't it amazing the difference a good manager can make with a county? Like, I mean, Wexford and Kilkenny this time last year, we'd be looking at that like Offaly and Tipperary, be like, right, we'll forget about that. And now we're looking at this as in a giant game. We're wondering, are Wexford going to show their full hand? Are Kilkenny going to show... Kilkenny, you'd imagine, will want to put Wexford down. Will Wexford play silly beggars? Because they do play again in the championship. So like, there's all this huge dynamic to a game because Wexford suddenly have a really good manager.
Yeah, no, and he's certainly brought back a bit of life to hurling, really. You know, again, I've said it before, front of the papers this week was all Davy Fitzgerald again. Like, it's amazing, and it's great that he brings that bit of buzz with him. And I know Anthony Daly did the same for Dublin when he was there. But this weekend is going to be a big game. I think you're right. If Davy wasn't involved, it would be a dead rubber. Like, everyone would say Kilkenny would hammer them. But because Davy's involved, people are expecting some kind of a trick or some magical tactics to come out and bamboozle the Kilkenny lads, which I don't think is going to happen. But
do you think he'll play silly beggars though? Because it would be like Davy. Like, you'd be very surprised if Davy plays the exact same way on Sunday as he's going to in the championship. Didn't he abandon his sweeper the year Clare won the All-Ireland for the semi-final, which is a very brave move, you know? Yeah, that kind of way.
Yeah, he did. But I think Wexford need to get a good performance against Kilkenny to give them confidence going through, and if they can get a win against Kilkenny, well, it'll be absolutely super for them to go to for the next couple of months training, you know, that they've beaten them or else put up a good performance. But I think they're getting Kilkenny at a good time as well. Albeit I know the Kilkenny tip game was really good, and Kilkenny looked like they were coming back to their old self. But you know, they against Dublin, they were very good against Dublin in the last game. But I think there's some areas that can be exploited, and maybe Davy has that, and maybe he has the players to do it. But I certainly think that the Wexford are not going to get a beating, like a 7 or 8 point beating. It's going to be very, very close. I think they're going to be very defensive, Wexford, because they don't want that to happen. And down in Nolan Park, so that they'll have the Davy will certainly have these Wexford lads absolutely wired, and I'm sure every Wexford supporter is going to go to Nolan Park as well.
Yeah, he'll have them completely wired up. It is at Nolan Park. Wexford and Kilkenny have a home and away agreement. The other three were tossed, you know, to see who get it. And Galway got lucky, actually, because they get Waterford at home and the same day that the footballers play Kildare. So that's huge games. I'm sure Damien, you'll be at it. But TJ Reid had some comments during the week here, and he's saying, sure, it's still early days. It's only the end of March. We probably started a bit slow. We're building. So the championship is where we want to be peaking. So, like, I mean, Kilkenny don't seem to be too concerned about their form, Damien. You know, like, I mean, everybody was talking about how poorly they were playing in the first two games, but yeah. I don't think Kilkenny cared too much.
But once again, Colm, you're speaking about TJ Reid here, a former hurler of the year, a man that has maturity, so he has and is able to answer the questions to the media. He's answering them exactly the way Brian Cody will be telling them to answer, but also how we know Brian Cody wants them to answer. It's early days. We want to peak in championship. You know, we're coming into form. You know, we're getting a little bit better. Our team is getting settled. We're finding a couple of players. These are all the things that Cody will be saying. This is what you say, lads, when you're being interviewed like this. And being honest with you, he's probably telling the truth and being honest with the media giving these quotes. That's exactly what Kilkenny wants. They want to find a couple of players. I'd say they trained fairly hard, I'd say, at the start. They wanted to find, which are finding a couple of players there now, you know, and they're going to try blend them in. And now, somewhere they're like Walter Walsh is becoming a massive leader. And I actually, the more I watch Walter Walsh hurling, the more I'm really getting to like him as a player. And he's starting to become another leader and a massive leader in that forward line. But TJ Reid, just being honest, championship, they want to be peaking in, and they will find that peak in championship. And he's just being honest.
Yeah, like, I mean, their half forward line against Dublin was Colin Fennelly, Walter Walsh and TJ Reid. So TJ Reid's back out in his favoured position. Full forward line was Blanchfield, Richie Hogan, who was taken off. We'll talk about him in a second. And it's young Connor Martin, isn't it, that scored 1-5. He's a new face.
Yeah.
You know, so he's thrown in there. So all of a sudden that Kilkenny team forward line looks absolutely sensational with the balance. Maybe Richie, you'd put him out centre forward or something. I'm sure he moved around.
He moves around a lot. But I also read a quote from Cody there, I think it was after the Dublin game, that he said he was happy enough now that they're into the quarter final and that was their target for the year. Like, what rubbish is that? Like, when has he ever been happy with a quarter final? Now that they're there, he's definitely going to win this.
Like, yeah,
there's no doubt about it. He wants another crack at Tipperary to get at them again and potentially in a league final. And all this talk of this Kilkenny team in disarray and they only have two forwards, and I think he loves this and all that. Like, that the fact that he can use this as a stick then to hit them in training, to say that and to give it a bit of energy to the younger lads to prove people wrong.
Yeah, I don't think Kilkenny were ever gone anyways. I don't think we said, but their full back line was up for debate. It was probably time we can take stock about how it's working now, because it was cleaned out of it, Damien, in the All-Ireland final last year, absolutely destroyed. And to the point where you'd wonder how Cody stood there and looked at this for a full game without making any changes. Yeah. It was like lambs to the slaughter. But Murphy's still in there, but obviously Padraig Walsh has gone full back, and to have Conor O'Shea in there, and they've been solid in the last few games. And you know, it's new look full back line. You know, we've seen five games with them now. Like, I mean, do you think that's a shored up a little bit?
Yeah, I think he's going to stick with that full back line. He didn't put them together for five games for nothing. And your man O'Shea is a big man, so he's a big cornerback. He reminds you kind of something of Jackie Turrell. And Padraig Walsh, it just shows what he thinks of Padraig Walsh. You know, we all know what he thought of Tommy, that, you know, in his day, that he thought Tommy was unbelievable up there with JJ, right? But now he's given the leadership role to Padraig to go and man this full back line. You know, we have problems here, we want you to fill up the problem. It's a little bit like Brendan Maher. We have a problem here, Brendan. You know, we want you to do a job here. And he's asking Padraig Walsh to do the exact same thing. And Padraig is going well, and he'll be cute enough, and he'll do the job, and he'll be getting good advice there from Tommy of how to do it and how to give the clip and how not to give the clip and how to get caught and how not to get caught, you know. So to be, there's no fear of them. But Kilkenny will be there and thereabouts. I don't think the panel is as strong as it used to be. I've said that before, but no, Kilkenny will always find players, and they have a top manager, as we all know. There's no hiding the fact in that, and they will. And with a top management team, it's very important to say that. Sometimes we're always mentioning Cody, but he is a top management team there with him, that, you know, that know their hurling that they have. And he's going to go with that full back line, Colin. Yeah, he will.
Yeah, it's interesting there, Conal, that Conor O'Shea is a big man, because he kind of needs to be, because Paul Murphy and Padraig Walsh, you know, you could say there's a weakness there under a high ball with Callanan and John McGrath. These fellas are so good in the air that he probably needs somebody that's got a bit of size in there.
Yeah, but like those two lads that you mentioned, Murphy and Walsh, like they're not tiny by any manner of means, and they're very, very strong, unbelievably strong, you know. And you'll see that when you actually up close to them, how big they are. They're big, huge men, big chests on them, like, and there's not too many people that would outcatch them or outfight them when the ball drops to the ground.
See, is height not as important in hurling? Like, is more being able to be strong enough to wrestle, to get the hand, is there a wrestling match to get the hand up higher? Or, you know, you would see in midfield midfield they do jump for it, but in the full back line, for example, would there be more wrestling going on than...
You need to have a big arse to be in there, I think. So that helps to move that arse.
I think Murphy actually and Walsh have arse stocky sort of fellas. They have the arse.
And it's not about really jumping for it. It's about wrestling at the right time and then trying to grab the ball. Not keeping the hand up there for like 2 or 3 seconds. It's doing it all at the one time and moving your body in the right way. And those two lads know exactly how to do it. And they have been doing it any high ball. The only thing is, okay, you might suggest that they might have the lightning pace that you might need if they're going to get playing a 2-foot forward line, a team they come up against. But they never really seem to get exposed because they always seem to stay as a unit a lot of the times, you know.
Right. What do you think of that, Damien? You don't necessarily need that height then if like you've played
Colin,
in there.
The greatest example I can give you there to try to explain it is, right? On a high ball, right, it has nothing really to do with height at times. It's to do with timing your run and your jump and your catch, right? And even, you know, playing the man. And the greatest example I can give you of this is the way Lara Corbett timed his catch and he's put his body in at the right time to nudge Hickey out of the way for his goal that he scored in the All-Ireland final in 2010. So a high ball is all about timing and about reading the game. And yeah, it's great that you're big and strong and all that, but Richie Hogan's another example, small man that's able to time his run to make the jump, to jump up and catch the ball. So that's the best way. I hope I'm explaining it maybe to people who are listening to the podcast. Lars' catch on Noel Hickey in the 2010 All-Ireland final for his I think it was for his first goal. That's what you're on about, timing and pace in your run and the catch.
Yeah, no, that's interesting because you do see the run and the jump in midfield a lot, but I'm just wondering if the ball is hanging in the full forward line, you don't necessarily have to run and jump for them. Yeah. It's more
and you can imagine this, you know, just the strength difference between at the time Noel Hickey and Lar, you know.
Yeah,
both big men, but Noel Hickey would have been a stronger man, you know, than Larry, you know. So that's just explained about the whole timing is vital on it. The whole timing.
It's also a lot of it's time, but a lot of it is getting on the catching hand side. So if you're trying to catch the ball in your left hand, I have to make sure that if I'm holding the hurl in my right hand, that my hurl is going across your catching hand. So it's kind of it's affecting your hand and it's affecting your eye. So my hand, I have a free hand then on my left hand to come in and catch the ball.
Right.
So you're trying to do all that as well. The same, but it comes
naturally.
And he's
pushing your hand as well.
But he's pushing your hand with the hurl, so it's not too bad. So you know you're kind of dictating a lot of the stuff that's going on and a lot of the physicality, so you're easy. And then obviously the golden one, which you get all the time, is the elbow right into the face, and then you can do nothing when
right
at that. But look, I think all of those lads are cute enough and they know exactly what they're doing.
Yeah, this happens automatically, I suppose. There's so much going on there, but it's just from playing all your life, these things just completely automatically
Colin,
happen.
Just to give you another example, Colin, in 2010 in the National Hurling League final, Galway played Cork. And John McIntyre was over the team, and he came up to me the Friday night before the match, and he told me that I was going to be marking Sean Oak, right? And he felt that I would be able to outrun Sean Oak with pace and all that. And I've never said it, but I was never a great man under high ball, you know. And I was saying to myself, now the signals now for me for puck out. What am I going to do, right? And I'm telling you about the timing and the jump, right? So the ball comes out my side, and I was never going to compete with Sean Ogan under the high ball, right? But as Conal just said there about standing on the catching hand, I kept standing to Sean Og's catching hand, which was his left hand, and every time the ball came up, I just jumped in on top of Sean Og and clipped his hand my hand, not with the hurl.
All right.
So that wasn't illegal, because I was clipping his hand with my hand, but if I came in with my hurl, so it's just I'm only just trying to explain the whole time and the whole jump and the whole that. So and it's
yeah, you'd imagine that would make perfect sense. You know, you need one hand just to knock it. Like, I mean, I would say that's very hard to police
small,
if you look like you're genuinely going for it.
Yeah, if you're small, I used to just jump up with Sean Oak and I just used to clip his hand, and the ball used to go straight through us, and Aidan Hart was playing inside me, and I told Aidan Hart before the match that this was what I was going to do, whether it would work or not, just be wary of it. And the ball went through us about five or six times in the first half, and Aidan Hart was out in front. size-wise. So sometimes it can work. Maybe that's a game plan now for management now going through in the summer.
There you are, yeah. Listen, you're giving us great little clues here. You're restructuring the league and you're giving us tips for small men there to compete with big men.
Not a bad league. Not a bad league structure.
Come here, I want to talk about Wexford. Jack Guiney's after getting back in the mix, lads. And like, number one, how good is this fella? He's had disciplinary problems and he's been in and off panels. From my perception of him is he's massively talented. And what they did the last day against Leash is they had him in full forward in with Conor McDonald. And that freed Leash in up to the half forward line, where to me he's much more effective. And Jesus, suddenly if Jack Guiney is this really good player, which he is, a good free taker anyways, that suddenly then you've got this trio. You know, you've got other supporting players then as well who are good. But like, I mean, that's potent forward line.
Yeah, no, it's not bad at all. And look, Jack Guiney is a great hurler. He's been there for a number of years and, you know, he's been in and out, and obviously it's been well documented he has a bit of disciplinary problems. But look, I think all young lads nearly have that. They have the little bit of streak in them that they do whatever they want, you know, and they go off and, okay, they might go in the beer a few times when they shouldn't. But I think it comes down to management, you know. Maybe there was a personality clash with him and Liam Dunn. I don't know, but it seemed to be from the outside.
Liam Dunn might be a bit too much of a disciplinarian for a free spit. If Jack Guiney is a free, you know, that kind of, I'd say Liam Dunn ran a tight ship. Where I think Davey has the personality to maybe cajole Jack Guiney a bit and get him on side. Because I think he gave him a break from the panel because his fitness levels weren't up to the levels he wanted. He said, go away for a few weeks. And Guiney went away and came back, and now he's back in the team. So he obviously reacted well to it.
Yeah, no, I think Davey knows how to kind of, you know, it looks like that Jack Guiney's the kind of fella you need to put your hand around and tell him how good he is so much. But look, he also, I'm sure Jack knows that this is a great opportunity. You know, he had a problem with the previous manager. Now he's coming at the right age that, you know, that he's coming into his prime of his career. So he needs to, you know, show a bit of discipline now and show how good, you know, a bit of faith into Wexford supporters, because they have always been crying out for him to come back. And now he's there. So let's see what he has. But look, he certainly has been a great player for Wexford anytime I've played against them. And that forward line, you know, it doesn't seem too bad at the minute if you have those two lads inside and, you know, get any kind of ball into them, because both of them will win the ball in the air.
The dynamic of the size, the dynamic of the scoring power, the athleticism, those three seem to take every box in a different way, and you need that kind of lads complementing each other. I even mentioned this in the football podcast, Aaron Maher playing Kieran McKeever in the full forward line with Jamie Clark and Stephen Campbell.
Yeah.
And he's a good foil for those two who are heavy scorers. You can't have three heavy scorers, but these Chin, Guiney and McDonald seem to have a really good contrast and dynamic amongst them.
Yeah, they do. And I think I think probably Lee's best position is around the middle of the field, where he can do a lot of the work, and he's a real athlete. He can get up and down, and he's also a very good hurling brain, because anytime you see him, he doesn't just lash it in. It's great ball in that he knows that he'd like to get inside, so because he's been in there. So I think it all shapes up to be very well, but I think a lot will tell on the weekend exactly how good they are.
Yeah, it'll tell us where Wexford are, Damien, if we're not in doubt, because there'll probably be non-believers out there saying, oh well, look, Galway and Limerick were at the very start of the league. Now Wexford kind of didn't hammer Leash in the last game, maybe they took their foot off the gas, but this will tell people in no uncertain terms where Wexford hurling is at.
Yeah, well, it's going to be a great challenge for them, you know. It's a good challenge, and it's coming at a very, very good stage and a good time of year, right? You're wondering, like, will there be shadow boxing between Kilkenny and Wexford in this game? No. Brian Coley doesn't do shadow boxing, so he doesn't. His belief is that if a game is there to be won, you win the game. Simple as that. And he believes always keep the foot down on top of the throttle, as in, you know, don't let a team get any bit of advantage on you. Now, that's what Davey Fitz is going to be saying to his boys is, he's going to say to his boys, right, we've got Kilkenny, who are potentially top team in the country, right? We're playing these in championship. Now, he could put out a bogey team and scrap his game plan, but I don't think he is. I think what he's going to do is he's going to tell the boys to go out there and see what Kilkenny are made of. And he's going to tell the boys that he wants them to compete. And he wants them to compete at a level to know what is required. I expect it actually to be a very good game. So I do. Wexford will know where they are at and where they need to improve. But he's going to use this game to show the Wexford players the level that they need to get to, and another notch or two that they need to go up on. You were just saying there about Guiney there, you know, with disciplinary issues, and Davey Fitz might get the best of him. What I always found about Davey Fitz was Davey Fitz got the best out of players if he liked you. Right, and if he thought he could do something for you, and if he could work with you like this. And I think David Fitz likes Guiney, and I think he feels he can get the best out of him and get the best out of him as a player. And you're saying about the potent forward line inside with McDonald's and Guiney and we'll say Lee Chin. The big thing here, Colm, is these are three good hurlers, these are three good scoring forwards and all that. The big thing is, can these boys work together as a unit? That's what it's all about. Can they work together and complement each other? And it might come down just to work rate and who cares who gets the score or whatever. It's all about trying to win stuff. But that's what I feel is going to happen on Sunday.
Yeah.
I think what Wexford need to bring... I think we've played Wexford so many times in the Championship and you never really felt... Okay, it got very close a few times and we got a draw and all that. But you never really... Well, I personally never felt that they could beat us. You know, I always felt that we were better than they were, and they deep down knew that. You know, that we had better players on the field, and it just didn't seem to me that they really believed. Because you'd always see, you know, there's always times in the game when you'd get vital scores, and their heads would drop straight away, and their communication would be non-existent, and that's a sure sign that they really don't believe in what they're doing at the time.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, with Davey, what he's doing with Clare, you can see he's certainly going to bring that belief, whether it's real or it's not. They're going to believe in Davey, and they're going to believe in what he says, and so that will give them a bit of confidence. And I think, as Damien said, they're going to go at this game on Sunday, and okay, they might come short by 5 or 6 points, but it's exactly what Davey will use this for the next couple of weeks, saying, well, we met them in March and they were they had a full team and we didn't, and we were only getting going and all this. So yeah, he's going to use it for confidence going forward, and I think they're really going to go at them.
Yeah, I think he will give them belief. And I remember when Mick O'Dwyer took us over in Laois, when someone like that who's won everything tells you you're as good as another team, you tend to believe him. You know what I mean? They've done so much, and Davey's won through All Ireland as a player.
You often get the best out of him the first year.
Yeah.
No matter what
the impact,
he said,
yeah.
Got
yeah.
No matter what he... Now, the second year, he might do the same thing, and you might, as a player, start going, this is absolute rubbish. You know, but
yeah,
first year, no matter what, he could be telling you to start eating turnips there for your breakfast. And you just start eating them because he said to start eating turnips.
Yeah, so, I do think so, and I think I do think Davey has... there's so much substance to Davey's management rather than that belief. He'll give you all that stuff and the intensity, but he's a proper tactical manager, and he can change things around, and he's a brave manager as well. And I think, you know, that can get lost with Davey, with his interviews and with his, you know, because his personality is so based on passion. Sometimes the actual technical manager that he is gets lost a little bit.
Yeah, but as Damien said, he backs it up. It's like every manager can come out and bluff Everton, like, and everyone would sit there going, Jesus, it sounds great. You know, like first meeting you have with a new manager in the dressing room, whatever it is, everyone will leave there thinking, oh my God, this is unbelievable, he's really good. Then you go to the first training session and it's a complete joke. It's
Everton's
terrible. But Davey, well, obviously he backs it up every single time, so you can't question, you know, you can't question where he came from, or he doesn't know the game or a tactic, because everything he's doing is the right thing, and he really puts belief in these players, and he surrounds himself in down in Wexford, and he gets involved. It was exactly like Daly did. He became a Dub, so I'm sure Davey has become a Wexford man at heart, and that's what he really wants to do, make Wexford successful again.
Yeah, I'd say the fans love him. Come here, we want to talk about Galway before we finish, because we talked about Waterford. Galway are very quiet this year, Damien.
Yeah, they're very quiet, even training wise. Like, once again, going back to, you're not allowed to hear anything, you're not allowed to, you know, it's all hush, you know. And it's been a fantastic draw for Galway. The weekend, they have a double header, so they have, I think there's going to be huge Galway support from both sides of the county, between the hurling and the football. So it is, and I expect Galway to beat Waterford, you know. And the reason why I say that, you might say, Colm, gee, where are you coming up with this now, Dan? But I've said it the whole time. You have to be winning your home games. You've got to be winning your home games. You're in your own home patch, your own training ground, the whole lot. And then Galway are going to have the massive support there. So I expect Galway to win. They're training very hard. There's no point saying they're not. Like every other county, they're training very hard. So they are. And I expect them to beat Waterford, so I do.
Yeah, they've a bad record against Waterford, though, do they? Like, I mean, they've never beaten them in the champ, or they haven't beaten them in 10 championship meetings.
I think the last time we played Waterford in Pearse Stadium was around 2011, 2012, right? And John Milan took the whole winter off. sided, and he came back sided for that game, and he scored 1-3 against his marking David Collins the same day. So he was inside in Pier Stadium, and I remember chatting him at the All Stars that year, and he told me that he was over at the Barcelona game, Barcelona soccer match the weekend before. And he told me he had a couple of the finest pints over there. And then he came back and he played against Galway, and no bother running around the pitch, just showed his upside. So that was, I think, the last time we played Waterford in Pier Stadium. And Waterford beat Galway fairly handy, being straight, fairly handy.
Yeah, reminiscing about the good old days with Milan. Milan, actually, we had Paddy Stapleton at the Coppers Road Show. And was it a Coppers Road Show or a different podcast? He said Milan was by far the hardest fella he's ever had to mark.
That was a lie. That was
he's marked you.
That was a lie. I cleaned out
did you?
I did not clean him out with this stuff.
Did you get a few scores off him? I'll have to hit him with this.
Paddy was no angel, I can assure you that.
No angel
so
you were no angel yourself.
What? You were no angel, Conor.
Like, I don't think there's such a thing as an angel in hurling. There's no such thing.
Jeremy Cole, you were no angel on the football and hurling side.
I used to love coming back giving you a slap anyway. You'd always react.
Well, you always came back every game, I think, when you gave me one.
Would you say this Damien's a bit of a fireball here? I'll go back and I'll torment him and he might react to me.
Ah, he was always mouthing Damien. It was good to go back and give him a snack.
That's a load of rubbish, Colin, you know.
Come here, Colin, what's your take on Galway? Like, I mean, I've been looking through their teams and I don't see, Damien can actually confirm this, not massively new player-wise to them, but it's almost like, do they need anybody new on that team? Because it's fairly young, and some of their forwards are young, some of their defenders are young. It's maybe they build on last year with they have.
They've been getting a good lot of new players coming in the last year or two anyway.
And sometimes you need to just stop there. You know, maybe they're bringing in too many new people, and this year they might go, look, you know, let's get settled maybe.
Yeah, they do need to get settled. But I think, you know, being in the division that they're in is nearly suiting Galway at the minute. They're just tipping along nicely, and they definitely earmarked this at the start of the year because they knew they were going to get to the quarter final. And what a draw to get at home! Like, Pier Stadium is nearly one of the worst places to go and try and play Galway down there. So what a draw for them! And this is going to probably, if they can get a victory against Waterford, it's going to kickstart their season. It really will, and that's what you want. Sure, like we just said already, like there's no point getting results in January and February. It's from now on, the end of March, April, May, and that's where you start ramping it up, and it's a great opportunity for Galway, especially at home.
Yeah, definitely, and we see the two last league champions came from Division 2. What about this David Burke at full forward, Damien? That was tried last week. He scored 6 from play, which is sensational. I didn't think because he's so good at midfield, I think it would be a bit of a waste, but is this an option for Galway?
Yeah, I think they're just looking at different options. He played full forward, so he did in the preliminary quarter final, so he did last year for his club. But look at David Burke. He's 3-time All-Star for Galway, so he's a regular. He's the captain. Once again, he could be a bit like Brendan Maher. They're looking at maybe just putting David in different positions just to see what they can do for the team. David's attitude will be top class, so he's the leader of the team. He's probably saying to the boys, no matter what they say to them, yeah, no problem, I'll do that for the team, I'll do this for the team, whatever. So they tried him in full forward, and like, David's able to score like this, you know, and he'd be well able to pick off scores, and he'd be well able to lay off scores. So right. I think it's just another option. That's what I would think. I would still say he will end up midfield for championship. But on a tactical thing, you know, maybe, you know, 10 minutes into the second half, things not going well, simple David Burke to full forward, rotate your forward line and bring someone out to midfield. It's just a change. And be honest, I think that's good ideas. But as Conor just said, being in Division 1B allows you to do these options. But if it was at the structure that I give the example of for the league, maybe you mightn't be as quick to do these things if you knew that you had to win these games to try qualify for quarterfinals and get promoted. So Division 1B has its perks in that respect.
Definitely, I'm all on for Division 1B. I think it's a fantastic division. Come here, Dahi Burke and Conor Whelan were excluded from the matchday squad against Limerick. I think it was for disciplinary reasons. Did you hear anything about that, or is it where a few pints had, like the good old days?
Well, I'd have to be honest with you and say I didn't know that. I was told that both of them were left out of the squad because of injury. And that's me, not me trying to cover up that. And I was told that the two boys were carrying injuries from what I call a reliable source. So,
Okay. Well, maybe
now that's what I was told. But I'm not going to start saying that I heard this, whatever. But that's, I heard the two boys were carrying injuries. Well, that's what went around. There were different rumours going around, but that was one of the rumours, and so I'll stick with that.
Right, okay, you'll do a David Brady on that. When it's your own county, you'll give absolutely nothing away.
David Brady
plays a strange game when it comes to Mayo. You couldn't believe a word out of his mouth when it comes to Mayo, so you're as well off, stay away from him. But come here, listen, as we've covered loads of stuff there, we'll be back quickly with an accumulator.
After the match with Marty Morrissey and the Marty squad, and you know, the big thing for me yesterday with Clare versus Galway was,
hang on, did you ask permission to do the Marty squad there?
Well, I didn't, but I was only a special guest. Last Thursday you asked me the same question when I started Bubbles, and I said yes on the Marty squad, because yes, I would have started Bubbles for that game yesterday. That was the first I heard of Johnny King coming back with the Galway squad. You know, I was asked just in the Marty squad.
Here, Damien, are you getting paid for Marty squad plugs on our show here?
That's three.
Wait, no, I do that completely voluntarily.
He hits it. It's over the bar. Oh, holy Moses! What a match!
Move away from the messing there, lads. Right, we have a serious show to do here. Right.
Right, lads, predictions time. Offaly against Tipperary. Offaly, like, this is a waste of time outside of the handicap. With the handicap, Offaly are plus 18 and they're at 5-6. So do you think Offaly with an 18 point head start could beat Tipperary?
I don't know.
You go Tipperary or even money at the minus 18 probably is the better way to look at that.
I probably would. And the other one, I'll actually go with Galway. I'll go with Galway to beat Waterford.
Galway are 5-6, Waterford are 6-5. Galway at home at 5-6 is a good price.
And I think in the other one, I'll go with Limerick.
Limerick to beat Cork. They're 4-6 at home against Cork.
Yeah.
And Kilkenny against Wexford. Kilkenny are no price, 1-4 against Wexford at home. I should have checked the handicap on that, but I didn't. So you'll have to just pick one of them.
I'll go with Wexford just to change it a bit.
Right, okay, that's very interesting. So off our Tipperary minus 18, Limerick, Wexford and Galway. Okay, so there are your four. Damien, what do you think?
I'll go the same but I'll go with Kilkenny.
Right, with Kilkenny. Well, I'm going to go for Tipperary minus 18. I'll go for Cork. I'll go for Kilkenny and I'll go for Galway as well. So we're actually all going for Galway to beat Waterford, even though Waterford are tried and trusted in Division 1A. And Galway, I suppose they did play Limerick in their last game. I wonder how much that, like, I suppose in 1B, the way you'd look at it, you'd want your last two games to be against the best two teams. Wexford went the other way around, where they had to start bloody training in October probably to get ready for these two. So it's, then maybe that's a drawback of Division 1B. You don't get the two good games at the end, when that's when you might want them.
But I think home advantage is huge for Galway. It's massive. And I don't know, something about Waterford you wouldn't overly trust all the time. And going down there in Pearse Stadium, they'll get a full of it anyway from Galway. But I think the football is on before it, is it?
Yeah.
So there's going to be a massive crowd there for that. So I'll tip Galway for that.
Yeah, and Offaly play Tipperary in O'Connor Park, and that is before Leash play Offaly in a relegation match. So there'll be a big Offaly crowd of that as well. Whether that'll make probably no difference to plus 18.
18 points is a lot. Like.
It's a lot, but what did it beat Dublin by? 25? Now, I know it was the first game, but that's
Dublin.
That was
Dublin. In Crow Park.
Yeah, maybe that make a difference. And both of you actually fancy Limerick to beat Cork then, actually. I'm only the only one that went for Cork there.
Yeah, I think I don't know. I know Cork were very good the last day. But I just have a sneaking suspicion that I just fancy Limerick for some reason in that game that they might just get one over on them.
Limerick are home. Limerick are favourites, which is surprising. Yeah. So that'll just tell you how much home advantage Damien.
I'll say Limerick, because number one, they need a good kick up the backside. Limerick, they're seriously disappointing.
I'd love to know your problem with Limerick.
Yeah, I know, but they do. They're way better than they are, and they never produce. And they need to up their consistency, and their big time leading players need to drive it and need to carry the ship and start pulling it to the direction that they want to go. And they're playing in the Gaelic grounds in Limerick, and as I keep saying, you need to be winning your home games in your home patches. So that's the reason, and I'd be expecting a reaction out of the Limerick team after. How many points did they score in the second half there against Galway the last day?
It was only 5 or something like that. Very disappointing.
That's extremely poor. So I'm expecting a reaction, and that's why I'd be going for Limerick, and especially with them being at home.
Yeah, okay, listen lads, that's brilliant stuff. We'll see how they go. We haven't been having too much luck with all these accumulators. But that's it, that's all we have time for this week. There's also a football show out today if you haven't checked that out. Well then check it out, and the Hard Yards Rugby podcast is out today as well, so listen, check them out in this order: hurling first, football second, and rugby third. And we'll see you on Monday for a review show. Good luck.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going. So it opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are. And we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today. Because, like, I'm heartbroken.